Never let the enemy see your fear.
Where did you learn that, little gem of wisdom? A book on battle techniques?
As a matter of fact, yes.
Come on.
I walked off, and when Sylvia caught up to me, I was glad to see she didn't look as if she wanted to throw up her breakfast any more.
"Do you suppose Jack has already been here and left?" she asked.
"It's entirely likely. He may have even gone to fetch the police, or be on his way back to Frackingham already. But we're here now, and we must go inside and find out for sure. Just in case..." I couldn't say it. Couldn't hear the words out loud.
"Yes," Sylvia said heavily. "Just in case."
A housekeeper wearing a spotless white apron answered the door upon our knock. I took this as a good sign. The presence of such a matronly-looking woman was a comfort. Tate wouldn't do anything with her near, surely. She directed us to sit in the small downstairs parlour while she fetched her employer. We hadn't been waiting 1 minute when the man I assumed to be Reuben Tate walked in. He wasn't very tall, but he was whip-thin and hollow-cheeked. He was about Langley's age, if the white hair was an indication, but where Langley had wrinkles around his eyes and across his forehead, Tate had none. His face was as smooth as a polished tabletop, and just as shiny. Indeed, the hairs at his ears were slightly damp too. The shirt sleeve that should have housed a left arm was folded and pinned to the side of his waistcoat. He wore no smoking jacket or housecoat, but he didn't look like the sort who went for such a casual appearance anyway. He was too neatly dressed. His hair was perfectly combed, and his chin cleanly shaved. Much like his face, there wasn't a single wrinkle in his clothes, and the shirt collar and trouser creases were sharp. "Welcome," he said, giving us a shallow bow. "I commend you both on your courage. I could see that it wasn't an easy decision to send your driver away and speak to me by yourselves." So he had indeed been watching us. I was glad that I'd guessed correctly and sent Tommy on his own errand, but disturbed too. I was also deeply disturbed that Jack wasn't there, yet not particularly surprised. When we'd not seen the carriage outside, I knew we'd missed him. Clearly he hadn't managed to get Tate arrested. Sylvia shifted uneasily beside me. "My name is Sylvia Langley," she said, thrusting out her chin. "I believe you know my uncle."
"How is August?" Tate asked.
He didn't seem surprised to hear her name, and I wondered if he'd recognized her somehow, or expected her. The polite response seemed to catch her unawares.
Well, thank you."
"Good. I'm glad to hear it. And who is your charming companion?"
He turned a rather bland smile onto me, but behind it was genuine curiosity. "My name is Hannah Smith," I said. "I'm a friend of the Langleys." His sharp intake of breath preceded a long pause in which he studied my face, my hair. I felt a blush rise to my skin, and I looked down, away. In less time than it took to blink, he was crouching before me. He touched his long finger to my chin and made me look at him so he could finish his study. I jerked away, and he slowly backed up to his seat without taking his gaze off me.
"Hannah," he murmured. "Hannah Smith, of course, of course."
He chuckled to himself and thumped the chair arm with his palm. I glanced at Sylvia, and she lifted one shoulder. She had no idea what Tate was talking about either. One moment he was a civil gentleman, and the next he was mumbling to himself and cackling like a witch. It seemed August Langley wasn't the only mad scientist in England.
"You haven't been under August's roof this entire time," he said. "I would have noticed."
"No, I haven't."
"Mr. Tate,"
Sylvia said, in a crisp tone that was reminiscent of Miss Levine, "we're looking for my cousin, Jack Langley. Has he been here?" Tate either ignored her or didn't hear. He was once more looking at me with such earnestness that I wanted the chair to swallow me up. It was as if I'd delivered a miraculous cure to a dying man, or offered up a profound piece of wisdom. I wasn't afraid of him, but I was unnerved and very curious. How did he know my name? How did Langley? Tate might hold some answers to key questions that Langley wouldn't give up.
"Do you know me?" I asked, breathless.
"Yes and no."
He grinned, revealing crooked yellow teeth. They were at odds with his neat, crisp clothing.
"Hannah Smith, where have you been for the last 18 years? I've been looking for you."
"How do you know who I am?"
"Hannah," Sylvia said, "perhaps we shouldn't be asking Mr. Tate that sort of question without Uncle present."
"Don't listen to her," Tate said.
His top lip pared back in a sneer.
"Langley doesn't have your best interests at heart, Miss Smith. I know him far better than both of you, and I know he cares nothing for you."
"I beg your pardon," Sylvia said huffily. "You know nothing of the sort."
The housekeeper re-entered, carrying a tray. She poured tea for us, then left without a glance back. Once she was gone, Sylvia grabbed my hand.
"We're going. Clearly Jack isn't here."
I patted her hand, and she caught it too, trapping both of mine. "I want to hear what he has to say," I said.
"Please, Hannah," she whispered. "Let's go."
Tate handed a cup and saucer to Sylvia.
"At least stay for tea. You might also find what I have to say interesting."
"I want to stay," I said to her, "just for a few minutes."
Her fingers tightened around my hands, then she let go. She accepted the cup, then put it down on the table.
"No. Come, Hannah."
I shook my head. Tate pressed the very edge of his lips to the rim of his cup and sipped.
"I'm not the enemy, Miss Langley. I've made some mistakes in the past, but I'm not out to harm either of you, whatever Langley has led you to believe."
"He hasn't led us to believe anything," Sylvia muttered.
"What has he told you about me?"
"That you two were partners once," I said, "and that you bought his share of the business with your proceeds from the sale of a drug." He took another sip.
"The bare facts. True enough, in essence."
"Mr. Tate," said Sylvia, "where is my cousin?"
A small crease connected his eyebrows, and after his gaze flicked to the door, it finally settled on her. He took another sip and regarded Sylvia over the rim of the cup.
"Don't fret, Miss Langley. He's well. After we talked, he wanted to explore the factory. My assistant has taken him on a tour."
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Sylvia turn to me. I didn't need to see her face to know she was confounded by Tate's calm manner. I was too. I almost preferred the slightly hysterical chuckling. This blank evenness felt unnatural. He was hiding something, and by the way the teacup trembled, it had to be either excitement or fear. Considering we were young, female and in his home, I doubted it was the latter. "Why would he want a tour?" I asked. "Jack came here to confront you over the theft of Mr. Langley's papers. Do you deny you stole them?"
"No."
"So you admit it?"
Sylvia scowled.
"Then why hasn't Jack had you arrested?"
"Because we had a very profound discussion, and he no longer believed involving the police was necessary. Shall I tell you what I told him?"
I desperately wanted to say yes. I suspected the things he'd said to Jack were tightly interwoven with my own burning questions about how Tate and Langley knew me. But Sylvia was right. We needed to ensure Jack was safe first. Afterward, I would seek out the answers.
"We'd like to see him," I said.
"Let him be, ladies. A lad like Jack needs time away from women and prattle once in a while. There can't be much for him at Frackingham, with only you two and that cripple for company."
The one-armed man was calling the wheelchair-bound man a cripple. If my sense of humour hadn't been leached out of me by Tate's odd declarations, I would have laughed out loud.
"Our conversations are quite lively, thank you very much," Sylvia said with a sniff.
Tate pulled a handkerchief from the pocket of his waistcoat and dabbed his forehead, but the shine remained.
"Tell me, Miss Langley, does your uncle still have that silent ogre hovering about? I remember when he first came to work for August."
"Bollard? Yes. Why?"
His lips flattened, and he carefully refolded his handkerchief on his knee.
"He's not what he seems, you know. He's devious. Watch him, Miss Langley. Watch him very closely. That's my advice to you."
I was beginning to think Tate would win if there were a mad scientist competition between him and Langley. No wonder they'd fallen out. Two such men in a confined space would be a formula for an explosive relationship.
"We'd like to see Jack," I demanded. "Immediately."
His lips flattened.
"As you wish. But first, let me tell you what I told him. I'd like the chance to defend myself. What I'm about to tell you not only eased Jack's mind, it spurred his interest in what I'm doing here. Shall we talk as we walk to the factory?"
"I don't know," Sylvia said, chewing her lip.
"I'll also tell you how I know you, Miss Smith."
He smiled at me in a way that could only be described as sweet. I was no longer sure how to take Tate. My instincts were confused. One moment he was all kindness, the next he was being odd and evasive. So I set instinct aside and used my head. I wanted answers, and if I needed to follow him to get them, I would. If there was a chance that Jack was there, we had to find out for sure.
"We'll come," I said, standing.
Sylvia seemed relieved to have the decision made for her. Tate rose and indicated we should walk ahead.
"I'd better begin at the beginning. No doubt August told you that he and I fell out over money, and that I stole his papers so that I could reproduce his latest remedy and sell it. He always did pretend I was the greedy one, when in truth it was he all along."
"What do you mean?" I asked.
We walked slowly out of the parlour and back into the entrance hall. An oriental rug deadened the sound of our shoes on the tiles. It was a new rug, the pile still thick, and it ran the length of the narrow hall. Another rug covered the stairs, and it too looked new, as did the hat stand, table, and framed mirror. The faint smell of paint hung in the air, but I could see no artworks. The walls must have been freshly painted.
"He has always wanted that which his betters had," Tate went on. "A grand house, horses, carriages, land. To him, those things meant status and respect, two things he desired more than any, well, more than the use of his legs."
He paused at the front door.
"You know this to be true, don't you, Miss Langley?"
Sylvia looked down at her feet. Her nod was slight, but noticeable.
"Your uncle was the one who wanted to sell the remedy for the most money we could get. I didn't want to sell it at all."
"I don't like you besmirching my uncle's name," Sylvia said.
"Then block your ears."
"What was the remedy for?" I asked.
"To combat an insidious disease," he said. "You wouldn't have heard of it."
I was beginning to get the feeling there was more to their remedy than they were telling us. Tate held the door open, and we walked outside once again. The small front garden had little to recommend it. It was sparse and winter bare, with only a few low-growing herbs planted in square beds, and several dormant roses spaced precisely apart along the fence. A stone path led to the side of the house, and we followed it.
"Your uncle may have wanted the money, but I wanted the glory of the discovery. See, we each have our weaknesses, Miss Langley, but I'm not afraid to reveal mine. I wanted to sell the rights to manufacture the drug to another company better equipped to do it, but keep control over its dissemination and packaging. August didn't care about that, since few companies with deep pockets weren't interested in a deal that didn't give them total control. He won, of course. He usually did when we disagreed. I think you both know how immovable he can be."
"So why did you steal his research?" I asked as we slowly made our way down the side of the house. It was damp and dark beneath the shadows of the house on one side and the wall of the neighbouring factory on the other. "Do you want to pass off his new drug as your own?"
"No, this time it's different. I'll admit that I have debts. I like to spend money, and unforeseen circumstances have meant a large outlay recently. But that's not why I took his papers, which, I might add, didn't have everything I needed to replicate the remedy."
"Good," said Sylvia.
"Long before August and I developed the remedy that made us rich, we were working on another experiment."
"What has this to do with anything?" she asked. Tate paused and looked at me. But I already knew. It had to do with me.
"August and I belong to a group called the Society for Supernatural Activity. It's not exactly a secret organization, but they're not very open about what they do. I won't go into the details, but suffice it to say the members like to dabble in the supernatural."
Sylvia snorted.
"What rot! There's no such thing as ghosts and whatnot."
She flapped her hand, but neither Tate nor I paid her much attention. Weren't Jack and I proof that supernatural phenomena did exist? Why do the members like to dabble, Mr. Tate? I asked.
To see if it exists or not.
I'm surprised that it interests you. Doesn't believing in such things go against everything scientists stand for?
For many, yes. Not for August and me. We wanted to study these phenomena to see how they work and try to replicate them in a laboratory environment. We thought if we could identify what caused paranormal traits in humans, we might be able to harness it.
And sell it?
Yes.
I stopped and put a hand to the wall of the house. The moss-covered bricks cooled my palm, but I had difficulty catching my breath. It felt like a weight was pressing down on my chest, pushing the air out of me. What am I, Mr. Tate?
You are a rare fire starter, he said softly.
In the dim light of the shadowy path, it was difficult to see him clearly, but his eyes sparkled with tears.
But you already knew that.
Yes, Jack and I are the only ones. He shook his head.
No, you're not. There's another.
Who? We'd reached the factory door, and he held it open for us. The door sported thick bolts, but none were locked. The heavy wood seemed new, the paint fresh. The bricks of the small factory were blackened above the doorway and the single boarded-up window to the right. Same as the house. There were no other windows on the one-story building that I could see. No sign of Jack, either, or, indeed, anyone else. I spared a thought for Tommy and hoped he had not yet arrived.
"I'll tell you inside," Tate said. "Jack's in there, and he's very curious about the same things as you, Miss Smith. I'll tell you together."
"Everything?" I asked.
"Yes, the entire story, dating back almost 22 years.
"Wait!" Sylvia gripped my arm and pulled me back along the path, out of earshot. Tate didn't come after us, but kept on smiling.
"It might be a trick,"
she hissed into my ear. "There's a very good chance that it is," I said gravely.
"Then we have to leave."
"No, Jack might be in there, and in difficulty."
"I doubt it. Jack doesn't get himself into difficulties, only out of them. He at least can set things on fire at will. You can't."
"I can if I'm angry, and I can assure you I'll be furious if Tate is lying. Sylvia, I have to find out what he knows. Do you understand how important this is to me? He has the answers to questions I've longed to know. Not only about my fire starting, but about my parents. Finding those answers means everything." My throat squeezed shut with the effort not to cry. I hadn't meant to sound so vehement, nor had I expected to want answers so badly that I would walk into a suspected trap. But I did. God, how I wanted to learn what Tate knew. I suddenly felt like half a person, with a major part of my life missing. Tate could fill in the hollow spaces. I had to know, and I would do anything to get those answers. Anything. I walked away from her and back to Tate. As I stepped through the doorway, the faint odour of damp ashes filled my nostrils. I could only see what lay within the beam of natural light, yet even that disappeared when Tate shut the door on Sylvia, himself, and me. But not before I saw the twisted and blackened metal of broken machines, the burnt beams and tools, and the utter devastation wrought by fire.
Is there a lamp, Mr. Tate?
Sylvia tried her best to sound commanding, but the wobble in her voice was unmistakable.
Light it, this instant!
I headed toward her voice and found her outstretched hands, searching for me. She latched onto me, and we clasped each other. Her heartbeat hammered against my shoulder. Her limbs trembled. She was terrified, and that would make her useless. It was up to me. I had to keep the fear at bay, otherwise the anger wouldn't come. "Where's Jack?" I demanded.
"I thought you wanted answers. Don't you want to know who the third fire starter is?"
"We want Jack. He's not here, is he?"
I felt the now familiar heat rise inside me, like a tidal swell that began in my belly and rose outward, upward. I embraced it, fueling it with deliberate thoughts of hatred toward Tate. I did indeed hate him, far more than I feared him.
"I'll tell you anyway."
Tate's voice came from further away, in the depths of the factory.
"It's me. I'm the third fire starter."
Chapter 14.
"You!"
Sylvia gasped.
"How?"
She let the sentence dangle unfinished, but I knew what she was thinking. How could three diverse people have the same ability? "Are we related?" I asked. "You, Jack, and I. Is there some connection between us?"
"We're not blood relatives."
His voice sounded disembodied, and it was difficult to tell from which direction it came.
"However, there is a connection."
Metal scraped, and a chain rattled, a macabre sound in the darkness. Sylvia whimpered and clung tighter to me. There was some comfort in her closeness. It would have been worse to be alone.
"Mr. Tate, sir,"
came a slurring, heavy voice. It belonged to a man, and he wasn't near us, but that's all I knew. I didn't recognize the speaker. Whispers followed as Tate and the other man exchanged words. I strained to hear, but caught nothing.
"Light something,"
Sylvia said, voice low. "I can't. Just try it." I flicked my fingers out. Nothing happened. I snapped and shook them, but still no heat rose, no sparks flew. "Damn," I muttered. Tate chuckled.
"Are you trying to form a flame, Miss Smith? You ought to know by now that it's futile."
He seemed to have finished his conversation with the other man, but I could see no one else in the darkness. Not even a shadow.
"Why?"
Sylvia asked.
"I've tried to control it," he said. "Tried to create it when I wanted it, and stop it when I didn't. I failed, time after time, as you would have too, Miss Smith."
"But..."
I pinched Sylvia's arm, and she fell silent. I didn't want her telling Tate anything that may be to our advantage. If he didn't know that Jack could start fires at will, then Jack could take him by surprise when he came, if he wasn't already there.
"Oh, Jack, where are you?"
Someone grunted. It came from the far end of the factory. It could have come from the slurring stranger, but I didn't think so.
"Jack?"
I called out at the same time Sylvia did.
"Jack, is that you?"
"It's me,"
came Tommy's thick, sleepy voice.
Tommy!
Sylvia let me go, but I held her back. Wait, I whispered. She said nothing for a few pounding heartbeats, then called out,
Tommy, are you all right?
The chain rattled again, followed by more grunting.
Bloody hell! What's going on? Miss Langley, is that you?
Yes, she said. Where are you?
Don't know. I can't see a bloody thing. There's chains around my wrists, and I can't move my legs.
Brightness flared in the depths of the factory as Tate lit a gas lamp. The small circle cast yellow light on the prone figure of Tommy lying on a bench, his wrists attached to chains, and his ankles cuffed to the table. Dried blood smeared his bottom lip, and a shadowy bruise cupped one eye. Behind him stood a huge man with a jaw shaped like a brick, and just as hard. His shoulders were wide and hunched as if he carried a heavy weight on them. His brow bulged over dull, vacant eyes.
My God! What have you done to him?
Sylvia cried.
He's a friend of yours? Tate asked. Ham said he was looking around the factory. I can't allow that. Who is he? Another one of Langley's so-called nephews?
He's our footman.
Tate tipped his head back and laughed.
Capital! So Langley's sending the servants to do his work for him.
Aren't you? I said, pointing my chin at the brute behind Tommy.
That's Ham, short for Hamley. August isn't the only one who can recruit oversized idiots to work for him.
Who are you calling an idiot?
Tommy said, pulling on one of the chains.
I was referring to Bollard.
Whatever Bollard was, he was not stupid. Not like Ham. Both may have perfected that vacant stare, but Bollard's couldn't always hide the shrewdness behind his eyes. I'd wager there were no thoughts of any kind in Ham's mind. If the label of idiot bothered him, he didn't show it.
Let Tommy go, I said. This has nothing to do with him.
He shouldn't have been in here, Tate said.
Why? Sylvia asked. It's not like there's anything worth seeing in this burnt wreck.
Let him go, I shouted. Tate moved further into the fuzzy circle of light near Tommy.
Are you getting angry, Miss Smith?
He picked up the lamp and held it high in our direction.
Yes, I believe you are. Very good. I'd like to see what happens. It's been a long time since I've observed the phenomena on another.
I swallowed, and some of my anger disappeared. It wasn't the reaction I wanted. Despite his wish to study me, spitting fire from my fingertips would have come in quite handy at that moment.
Jack's not here, is he?
I said, in the hope the answer would rile me again.
No, said Tommy. I had a good look around before this beast clobbered me.
He pointed at Ham, and the chain clanked against the bench.
Jack's not here, Tate said. I haven't seen him. What does that mean, do you suppose? Has he left? Is he lost?
I doubt it, Sylvia said.
I pinched her again, and she flinched.
Pity. I would have liked to see him after all this time. He was a baby when I last saw him.
He'd known Jack as a baby. Was that because Jack really was Langley's nephew, and as his partner, Tate had seen him? Or was there another reason? Something to do with the fire? Tate returned the lamp to the hook hanging from the ceiling near Tommy and stepped back into the shadows. There was only enough light to outline his silhouette.
He was a good baby on the whole, but when he threw a tantrum, he was far more frightening than any child had a right to be.
I could only imagine. Were we born with it? I asked.
Hannah, now is not the time to question him about yourself, Sylvia whispered. We must release Tommy and find Jack. Have you got a plan?
Yes, I lied. I'm instigating it as we speak. I felt her relax a little against me, which I decided was indeed part of my plan. A relaxed Sylvia could think clearer and act faster, if necessary. "Release Tommy," I ordered Tate. He began to move towards us through the darkness, his silhouette dimly visible until his pale, glistening face emerged from the darkness like a ghost. Sylvia gave a little squeal, and Tate growled, baring his ugly teeth. He pushed her away. It wasn't a hard shove, but she fell to the floor.
"Sylvia!"
I reached for her, but Tate grabbed my arm and pulled me into his side. His breath reeked worse than rancid meat, and heat swamped me. It was like opening an oven door and being blasted by hot air. There were no sparks or flames, but it was almost too hot to bear.
"Miss Langley! Miss Smith!"
Tommy tried to free himself, yanking at his chains and twisting himself about on the bench. It achieved nothing except a great deal of frustration, if his grunts and curses were any indication.
"What's going on, you cur?" he snarled. "If you harm them, I'll kill you."
Tate didn't seem to hear him, or care what he'd done to Sylvia.
"Hannah,"
he said, voice feather soft in my ear.
"Oh, Hannah, I'm so glad you've come back to me. I've been searching for you for a long time. A very long time. Sweet little baby Hannah."
He touched my hair, my cheek. I turned my face away, but he let go of my arm and grasped my jaw instead, forcing me to look at him. His fingers dug into my skin, crushing the bone. Heat and pain shot from my jaw to my neck and cheeks. I couldn't move my head. Couldn't speak.
"I've waited years for you. Years. I will not let anyone take you away this time. I need you."
The man had only one arm. Surely I could free myself. I tried pulling away, but he held my jaw too hard. My face hurt. My cheeks mashed into my teeth. I punched him in the chest, and to my surprise and sheer relief, he grunted and let go.
"You little monster," he snarled.
I raced to Sylvia's side and was about to bend down to her when a thick arm circled my waist and pulled me back. Ham. My feet rose off the ground, and the massive arm held me so tightly I felt like I was being sliced in half.
"Let go!"
I screamed, clawing at Ham's arm and kicking out at Tate, who stood in front of me. I missed, and Ham made no sounds of pain as I shredded his shirt sleeve and drew blood.
"Hannah!"
Sylvia got to her feet and ran to us. Ham deflected her with a fist to her shoulder, and she fell onto the floor once more. She slid into a burnt set of drawers with a missing leg. Somehow, it had managed to remain upright throughout the fire that had destroyed the factory, but a bump from Sylvia sent it crashing onto the rubble.
"Sylvia!"
I called.
"Are you all right?" Yes,
came her shaking voice.
Bloody hell,
Tommy growled.
Let me go. Fight like a man, you one-armed dog.
I didn't think name-calling was going to achieve much, but I didn't say. I was more worried about the brute squeezing me. I couldn't breathe.
Easy, Tate said to Ham. Don't kill her. I need her alive. The other two, however, are unnecessary.
Sylvia sobbed into her folded arms. Tommy's chains rattled violently, and he grunted again as he tried to free himself. Ham eased his grip. But he was too big. I couldn't get away. Not by any conventional means, anyway. Get angry. Get angry. Get angry! It was useless. I was much too afraid. Tears blurred my vision and dripped down my cheeks. Tommy and Sylvia were going to die because of me, and I would become a prisoner again. This time, of Tate's. All because I couldn't call on my temper at will. My fear was much too powerful. I'd once thought myself brave. How wrong I'd been. A high-pitched grunt had me opening my eyes again, just in time to see Sylvia raising a piece of ceramic pipe above her head. But Tate had heard her too, and he turned in time to catch the pipe. He wrenched it from her grip as sparks flew from his fingers and shot in all directions. He had no difficulty growing angry. Sylvia fell back onto her rear, but Tate went after her, holding the pipe like a bat. She screamed and put her hands up. I screamed. Tommy shouted and cursed, his chains rattling furiously. Still, Tate descended upon her. A small light to the right caught my attention. Flames danced atop a piece of broken wood. Tate's sparks must have set it alight. Much of the factory's contents were already burnt to ash, but there was enough left to provide fuel for another fire. Sylvia and Tommy would burn to death if Tate didn't smash their heads in first. He had been distracted by the fire too, but now he turned back to Sylvia. She cowered on the floor near the fallen drawers, her face buried in her arm, her feet pulled up to make herself as small as possible. Huge, gulping sobs racked her body.
No, I begged Tate. No, please don't. I'll do whatever you ask. I'll help you willingly with your research if you leave them unharmed.
You'll help me anyway. You won't have a choice. I can't leave witnesses.
He raised the pipe. Something bright whooshed past my ear and slammed into his chest. He fell backward, crashing into burnt tables and equipment, splintering wood and sending objects flying. His eyes and mouth widened in shock. I could see his expression clearly, thanks to the bright ball of fire that had sent him reeling, and now set his waistcoat alight. I turned to see the source of the fireball, just as Ham let me go.
Jack!
Sylvia cried. Jack stood in the open doorway, sucking in deep breaths, his fists at his sides, as if he would draw holstered guns. Another man stood a little behind him, his mouth ajar as he took in the scene. I was so relieved to see Jack, I almost ran up and hugged him. But there was no time for that. Ham lumbered up to him and swung his massive fist. Jack easily ducked it.
Stop! The stranger shouted. I'm Inspector Ruxton from Scotland Yard, and I command you stop this at once.
A policeman. Oh, thank God. But his announcement changed nothing. It was as if he weren't even there. Ham struck out at Jack, but Jack was fast and dodged it. Indeed, he was so fast it was difficult to distinguish his movements. He must have hit Ham, because the man tumbled backwards, but not before he landed a punch that Jack hadn't seen coming. Jack grunted and doubled over. The inspector rushed in and ordered them to stop fighting, but Ham swatted him away like an annoying bee. The inspector fell to the floor near Sylvia, hitting his head on the corner of a steel box, rendering him unconscious. She checked to see if he still breathed.
"He's alive," she said. "Now what do we do?"
Tommy coughed.
Ladies, perhaps you can free me before the fire comes any closer."
He coughed again and pointed his chin at the fire that had spread from those few sparks of Tate's. It was very near him. Too near. I helped Sylvia to stand.
"Get out," I ordered. "But Tommy!"
"I'll help him." When she hesitated, I pushed her gently. "I can't burn Sylvia. You can. Now go and take Inspector Ruxton with you." He was making noises on the floor and rubbing his head. If she could get him to stand, she might be able to stumble outside with him.
"I can't save Tommy unless you're safe."
She glanced at Tommy in the fire, so close to him now that he'd turned his face away from the heat. His body shook with his coughs as the smoke filled the small factory. Breathing was difficult for me too, but not impossible. Not yet. I might not be able to burn like normal people, but could I die from breathing in the smoke? Sylvia whimpered, then seemed to come to a decision she was happy with. She nodded and helped the dazed inspector to stand. Together they made it out the door, wheezing and coughing. I headed toward Tommy, but Tate stepped in my way before I reached the bench. Sweat trickled down the edge of his hairline and dripped onto the floor. It was hot in the factory from the growing fire, but bearable, yet he looked as if he were melting.
"I won't give up this easily," he snarled, grabbing a fistful of my hair.
I'd lost my hat at some point, and my wild mane had come free of its pins. He pulled. I winced, but did not cry out. I didn't want to do or say anything that would distract Jack. He was still locked in battle with Ham, and couldn't afford to lose his focus. The brute would see the opening and pound him for sure. But why wasn't Jack using his fire on him?
"Very well,"
I gasped as my chest constricted with the need to breathe clean air.
"I'll do as you ask. Call off your man. Let Jack and Tommy go."
Tate coughed into his shoulder.
"No.
Let them go."
"Why would I do that?"
He had to shout over the sound of wood cracking and Jack and Ham's grunts and coughs.
"It's you I want, not them."
"But Jack's like us. You need him too."
The desperation in my voice betrayed me. I would try anything, say anything, to get them free. Flames crept up the legs of the bench on which Tommy lay, flirting with the benchtop. He was coughing uncontrollably, trying to twist himself so that he could bury his mouth and nose in his arm to breathe. I had to get him out.
"No, Hannah," Tate said. "You're the only one I need. Only you. He's not like us. You saw."
I didn't know what he was talking about, but there was no time to think. Indeed, thinking had suddenly become very difficult as heat rolled over my skin and smoke filled my chest. Sparks spat from my fingertips and landed near the scorched hole in his waistcoat. Tate casually slapped them out with his hand. My fury vanished as fear once more took hold. But this time I would keep my wits about me. Tommy's life depended upon it. Tate went to grab me, and I stepped out of his reach. My bustle hit a table, halting my progress. Tate lunged. I fumbled behind me, and my fingers touched something solid and long. I picked it up and swung it at his head. It was some kind of tool, and it made a very good weapon. Tate crumpled to the floor, unconscious.
"Miss Smith!"
Tommy wheezed. I tore off a piece of my skirt at the hem and tied it around my nose and mouth, then tore off another strip. I removed the chains attached to Tommy's wrists and handed him the cloth. He tied it around the lower half of his face as I unclasped the cuffs at his ankles. The bench had caught alight, and Tommy had to leap off before his clothes suffered the same fate. He wove and ducked his way through the wrecked factory to Jack and Ham. The big fellow bled from the nose, but he didn't look any weaker. He swung at Jack, but Tommy caught his arm. He couldn't stop the momentum completely, but did slow Ham down enough to allow Jack to punch him hard enough to daze him. Tommy and Jack were able to subdue him between them, but all three coughed violently. My lungs screamed for fresh air. My chest hurt with the effort to breathe. Smoke made my eyes water and my mouth dry. We had to get out.
"Anyone still alive in here?"
someone called from the entrance.
"Coming!"
I rasped as loudly as I could. Whether I was heard over the roar of the fire, I couldn't tell. Smoke and heat whirled around us. Flames flowed like a river across the ceiling, up the walls, eating everything in its path. A beam fell on the bench on which Tommy had lain, and that section of the roof caved in. Jack ushered me to the door. He and Tommy held Ham between them, but the thug didn't struggle. I think he wanted to get out of there too. We poured out of the factory and into driving rain, just as more of the roof collapsed. Four men relieved Tommy and Jack of Ham. Sylvia caught me in her arms and hugged me. I could barely hear her soothing words above the shouts and activity of the men. There seemed to be dozens of them, some in uniform with brass helmets, others in plain workman's clothing. They wrestled with two thick hoses spurting water onto the factory. It wasn't raining, after all.
"Did you fetch them?"
I managed to rasp out between my coughs. She nodded and looked over my shoulder.
"Tommy, where's Jack?"
I spun round. Tommy was there, bent over and sucking in air. Jack was nowhere to be seen.
"He's gone inside," I cried.
I tried to pull away, but Sylvia held me back, and Tommy blocked the way.
"I have to go in. He's gone for Tate. Let me go, Sylvia. I can help him." "He can do it alone," she said, "or not at all. I wouldn't care if that villain died in there. Hopefully the smoke will kill him, if the fire will not."
I wasn't sure I cared either, but that wasn't the point. Would Jack abandon the task if it proved hopeless? Or would he try until he could try no more?
"I won't burn," I said, my voice high, desperate. "Let me help him."
"No," Tommy said. "You may not burn, but the smoke will get you."
He coughed to emphasize the point.
"But it'll get Jack too,"
I said on a whimper.
"He can't die in there. He can't."
It wasn't until I tasted salt on my lip that I realized I was crying. Sylvia held me tightly, and Tommy hovered nearby, ordering the firemen to spray directly through the door. Moments ticked by. I was soaked. We all were. Our clothes plastered to our bodies, our hair bedraggled. I didn't care. I just wanted to see him again. He had to be all right. Had to be. I needed him. Finally, he staggered out, carrying an unconscious Tate across his shoulder, as if he were a log. Two firemen took him, and Jack stumbled forward, coughing over and over. Tommy helped him to the side of the house, out of the way, and set him on the ground. Sylvia and I knelt beside him. His lower lip had begun to swell, and blood dripped from a cut above his eye. His face was blackened from the soot, as was Tommy's. Mine must have been too, but I didn't care about my appearance. I gently pushed Jack's hair off his forehead, and my fingers immediately began to glow. He caught my hand anyway and pressed the palm to his lips. He suppressed a cough and gently kissed the skin at my wrist. Heat rushed through my limbs, and I pulled away just in time. A large spark shot from my fingertips and sizzled in the damp earth. I sat back on my haunches, breathing heavily. Jack smiled ruefully.
I couldn't help myself. I'm so relieved you're all right.
I'm rather glad you're alive too, I said, and grinned. If I threw my arms around him, would we combust? I wanted to, so much, that I was almost prepared to try it.
What about us? Tommy said. Aren't you glad your cousin and I are alive?
Would you like a kiss too?
Jack asked him. Tommy sniffed.
Don't think that'll get you off. I'm bloody angry at you for going back in there for that monster.
Monster. Tate was indeed one, in every sense. It was also the word he'd used to describe me. I sat near Jack and pulled my knees up to my chest. It was a very unladylike pose, but I didn't care. I'm sorry, I said. I'm so sorry. I couldn't. I was too scared.
Don't, Jack said. It's not your fault.
But I should have been able to do something. Something like what you did with that fireball.
You haven't learned to access the fire at will yet.
Would I ever?
Jack's right,
Sylvia said, circling her arm around me. You did everything you could. You freed Tommy on your own. She hugged me, and I hugged her back.
You did save me in there,
Tommy said quietly. I looked up to see his warm eyes blinking at me. They were filled with tears that didn't spill.
Thank you, Miss Smith.
Perhaps you can call me Hannah now, I said.
Right then, Miss Hannah.
He suddenly grinned.
May I make a request?
Of course.
Can you please not leave the rescue till the last moment next time?
I don't plan on there being a next time.
With you and Jack around, Sylvia said. I think you're being over-